We are the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. Well, let's just say the 6 o'clock news will never be the same again. The days of Walter Cronkite and three network channels has long passed. Well, journalism has morphed into news, opinion, and ideological rants, all passed off as unbiased, honest news. This is Malcolm Out Loud here. So your search continues for the Out Loud truth. I get it. Well, here it won't be just the news. It'll be how we discuss the news. A drive time show you can count on weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We call it Nozzle. World news, political talk, stories that impact your health. Honor our heroes, stories that'll inspire you. What you'll hear next is the heartbeat of the people. The hottest topics, the news stories that trend. It's time, friends, for a new stream of consciousness. It's Nozzle. So the question was put to White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Of course, the press wants to know more about this summit, what's going to happen. So she says, as the president himself confirmed on March 20th, hours after his last call with President Putin, the two had discussed a bilateral meeting in the not-too-distant future. For a number of potential venues, potentially, including the White House, she says. We have nothing further to add at this time. Clinton, I want to ask you right up front here. I think this is going to be probably one of the biggest summits and meetings we've ever had or ever theorized in our country. When you think of Vladimir Putin on one side and President Trump on the other, we've made a bit of a mockery out of this relationship, you think?
I think we have. I think the dialogue has been ramped up a lot. Some of it obviously escalated by media. Some of it, of course, escalated by individuals who are lobbying things back and forth. But in terms of a level of importance, this goes right up there, probably going back to the time of when Reagan and Gorbachev were sitting down. I mean, of that type of importance.
Wow. Yeah, that's great point. I don't deny that either. I think that could be, the potential of that could be enormous. Of course, the media will be all over this one for sure, and I'm sure they'll be looking for the hot mic moment as well with this. There's no doubt in my mind. Whether there is one or not, I don't know. I want to ask you here, because we've never spoke about this before, sincerely, do you think that there is or was collusion on any level between the Trump campaign and Russia? Do you think that existed at all?
You know, it's tough to say. I will say... And I think a long while back, I don't know if you recall or not, but one of the CIA directors as well as the FBI was called to Congress to speak on this. And I think, at least in my opinion, what came out of it was is that Putin genuinely had a dislike for Hillary Rodham Clinton. Mm-hmm. And that initiative or that involvement by Russia, it didn't matter if it was Mitt Romney, it didn't matter if it was John McCain, it didn't matter if it was Donald Trump to a certain extent. That effort was basically put out for the purpose, you know, from their end of just really besting or defeating Hillary Rodham.
So you think it was anybody but Hillary?
I think that was the overall strategy. I think the relationship between her and Moscow had definitely soured. As you recall, you know, with a big, gigantic red button, the reset button.
Yeah, I can't imagine. Yeah. I mean, somebody who looks attractive as that, that wears a fluorescent orange pantsuits and has buttons from Staples. I can't imagine why.
Well, you know, attractiveness, you know, I won't get into that, but I can definitely I could definitely talk about from a policy standpoint, you know, and I think that she never really jived with Putin, and Putin is definitely somebody who likes to do a lot of chest beating and chest thumping, if you will, and that kind of era of politics, if you will, was kind of beneath, if you will, Hillary. And I think as a result of that, it never really jived together.
Well, listen, I don't think they ever took her seriously, number one. Okay. I think they never took Hillary Clinton seriously as far as policy goes, back to your point of policy.
Sure.
I think they recognized, and, you know, but if you look at the body language of some of those meetings she had with them, I think they kind of knew, just be direct here with you, as I always am. I think they realized that she was a snake in the grass, you know, and I think they called her on it, quite frankly, and that's my take on it.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, so Hillary definitely, I mean, even amongst Democratic circles, which I do belong to, and the answer is a full disclosure, amongst many Democrats, you take a look at obviously the election that happened between her and Sanders and mm-hmm. and the fallout that occurred there. And we have very much so a divided party. You know, we have a group of people, I mean, on the Sanders side, which are really, I mean, you can call it democratic socialist, you can call it whatever you want to call it. At the end of the day, the principles are based on socialism.
Yeah.
You can look on the other side of it and mm-hmm. look, obviously, from an establishment politics standpoint of obviously the Clinton regime. Mm-hmm. And everybody in between that didn't align to one side or the other ultimately kind of got silenced, if you will, between the two.
Yeah.
And so when it comes down to Hillary and her policies and obviously the effect on Russia, I mean, you know, there is a certain group of people obviously that are out there on a national, international level that have just seen the same song and dance from her for a long period of time and just shut it off.
And the odd thing about it is she still hasn't given up. She's still out there talking. I mean, it's mind-blowing that this lady will never let that election go. She was just in the last few days overseas talking about this election again. You've seen that, I'm sure, in the reports. Pretty amazing how she's never let it go, and she never seems to be able to get. But, you know, if she doesn't start to do that, don't you think she'll hold the Democratic Party back in this coming up election?
I think she's definitely, from a Democratic standpoint, I think she is unequivocally a liability.
Big time.
You know, I think you have a lot of other voices on the Democratic side that are out there that don't mm-hmm. nearly have the baggage that she has mm-hmm. from the whining and dining relationships with Goldman Sachs to other favors, obviously, that have gone on.
To selling uranium to Russia, to all the Clinton Foundation, to, you know, I can go on and on and on. Sure. To Benghazi, to whatever,
well,
name it.
Well, I mean, the uranium one, obviously, is, that was, you know, from a research standpoint, a lot of people went out and said that that was really kind of much ado about nothing because it had transcended multiple administrations. But with the foundation, obviously, you can see that the organization, that the FBI has begun opening up some stuff again to look into that again to see
right.
if there was anything that's there.
Right.
And heavens knows there's a lot of dirty laundry that's out there. I mean, even from a WikiLeaks standpoint of just seeing what came out,
that's
some
right.
of the emails
that's
that
right.
were that
oh,
were
yeah.
out there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it really kind of exposed, yeah. so to speak, some of the ongoings or backyard pay-to-play stuff.
Yeah, it exposed all that. It exposed the corruption of the DNC. I mean, Donna Brazile's book, Hack, did that. I mean, that exposed an awful lot. I mean, I've read that book. It was a flamethrower. Huh.
You know, the amazing thing about yeah. Hillary was in terms of from a brazen standpoint, if you will.
Yeah.
You think about that relationship with Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who, in my opinion, shouldn't even be holding congressional office at this point.
Yeah, finally.
You know,
we agree.
And you see her obviously out there, and you see the role that she took place that was in there. You see the role obviously that Donna Brazile had obviously in doing
yeah.
this.
Yeah.
And you think about a couple of things. Number one is you had Governor Martin O'Malley, mm-hmm. you had Jim Webb,
right.
neither of which were basically on the Democratic side, who were granted the same share of time during the debates.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there was times
that's
where they
that's
stopped
right.
in the middle of the debate, both
that's
of
right.
them, and raised their hands going, "What's going on?"
Right.
And the fix was in.
That's a great point. Now, we'll come back to this topic a little bit. You hit some really great points here, man, and I'm looking forward to talking more to you about this one because you're so right. Their voices were silenced right out of the gate. They never had a shot. If there was a shot, the fix was in. The fix was in clearly. Let's go through some other trending topics real quickly here up front in the show here on Nozzle today. And the other one, Clinton, is that was announced today, and we knew this was going to happen. Is he's it was announced the White House that the president was going to meet with Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. This very much coming up pretty quick here, and that's going to be done, I think, down in Mar-a-Lago. They're talking in latter part of April here, actually. That's coming up pretty good. Now, he's already met him. He already had a meet and greet with him. And actually, that's down in your part of the world. Aren't you down in South Florida there somewhere?
That is a stone's throw away from me.
Do you get invited to any cocktail parties? Do you get invited to at Mar-a-Lago or anything like that?
No. You know, I think he's followed my Twitter history, so I don't yeah. think he's inviting me anytime soon.
Oh, I see. Okay, cool. I haven't even followed the history there. I hardly get on myself there, but all right, cool. Well, so this will be as well. This is another meeting that was announced today here. And the other thing were the tweets coming out over the weekend on Mexico mm-hmm. regards to NAFTA, where he sort of tied some of the wall thing to NAFTA is another big story. He says here, sure, Mexico is doing very little, if not nothing, at stopping people from flowing into Mexico. Like, this is not a real revelation here, my friend. This has been ongoing here. Through the mm-hmm. southern border and then into the U.S. They laugh at our dumb immigration laws, that I agree with. They must stop the big drug and people flows, or I will stop their cash flow. Now, this is what surprised a lot of people. He said, mm-hmm. NAFTA need wall. So he said, I will stop their cash flow. NAFTA need the wall. That was a big surprise to people that he threw that out there like that. But this president has a tendency to do that, and he does that to get a rise out of people. I'm curious to talk some more about that with you today. Also in the news today, China. They are imposing tariffs. Not that this was a big surprise, because this is how it works on the big on the high seas here of trade. They're coming back to impose tariffs on 128 United States exports, including pork and fruit. But quite frankly, it's minuscule. I mean, as far as the impact it's going to have here, although there will be people's lives impacted here. Certainly, it's going to impact real people. You know, and also there's a kind of a quasi strike going on, which is very odd today in Kentucky, I believe, Oklahoma, and even some other areas, some other states. Arizona's even been talked about. And the teachers are upset. They're demanding more funds for education. And of course, a lot of them are underpaid to begin with, and more for themselves as well. That's kind of happening across the country. A lot more to talk about on Nozzle today. Let's just take a moment here as we stream forward, and let me tell folks interesting name. Now listen to this. We have Clinton. Well, we say it Mueller or Mueller, depends. But you know, Clinton people, when it comes to special counsel, which we'll talk about today too, Robert Mueller, people mess that name up all the time. And I asked you that coming in. Is it Mueller or Mueller? You said, well, the family really says it's Mueller, but they actually call it Mueller today. So that's kind of interesting. Why people mess up Robert's name, huh? Because it's kind of said half the time one way, half the time the other way. You have the same problem in your family, huh?
Oh, well, so it's obviously from Germany. It's right. Like Smith in English, if you will. And right. so the derivative from Germany is actually Mueller.
Right.
But of course, when everybody, you know, immigrates to the U.S., just like many other last names, it gets phonetically pronounced as, you know, kind of Anglo-Saxon. So it became
right.
Mueller.
Right. Well, listen, let me ask you this. Are you related at all? Everybody's going to want to know. Any blood relative at all? Or
I'm sure far down the line, but I haven't Ancestry.com'd him yet.
You really should. That'd be great to know if you were like a couple of cousins removed or something, huh? It may or may not be good, depending on how you look at it here. But anyways, Clinton, please take 15 seconds. Tell folks out there just a bit about yourself, please.
Sure. Well, I'm a native Floridian, born and raised actually in St. Petersburg, Florida. I now live in Fort Lauderdale. Spent the better part of my life in both politics and doing some charitable work with organizations like Habitat for Humanity and some education organizations. And now I'm chief operating officer of a consumer products company that imports and exports goods from, ironically, China, and also Barcelona, Spain, to the U.S.
We'll be talking about China today and a whole lot more Nozzle in just a moment.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
Putin and Donald Trump. What's the anticipation coming from, you know, what do Democrats expect from this meeting, do you think?
I think Democrats are going to, you know, in terms of, well, let me clarify, liberal Democrats, I think, are going to expect a whole lot of nothing to come out of this, frankly. I think it's going to be, from their standpoint, it's more sensationalism than anything else. where moderates come along. And when I say moderate Democrats, I mean, you know, the people that are in the middle that represent 50% of the country that everyone's forgotten about.
Which is where you fall, right?
Exactly. You got it.
Yeah.
You know, well, you know, what I would like to see is, you know what, whether you agree with the president or not, at the end of the day, he's our president. And it's our strategic best interest to try to make sure that whatever he does, both domestically and abroad, succeeds.
Now, hold on. Listen to the words there. I just want people to hear them. It's in our strategic best interest. I love that. I think they forgot what that means, Clinton. You'll never hear that out there today at all. I mean, what they want to do is throw him under the bus and run him over is what they're looking to do here, you know?
Of course. Of course. Well, and that has to do with the bipolar, political environment that we're in, where the Democrats have ran largely far left. The Republicans largely have ran for far right. And they do it largely because of it's what raises the dollars. You get these bases, you know, foaming at the mouth.
Interesting.
And
point.
they throw money left and right at it. Meanwhile, the rest of us in the middle are waving our hands saying neither one of these parties represents us anymore.
God, is that so true, man? You just hit so many nerves right now in your talking points. What a great opportunity to talk to somebody with a great mind here today who actually would call himself a Democrat, but more of a... Now, let me ask you this. When you say liberal Democrats, I want to ask you this question. I think a lot of people would want to know. Tell me the difference in today's landscape right now, the difference between a liberal Democrat and a conservative Democrat. I don't think people really understand that there really is a difference, but you're saying there really truly is a difference.
Oh, absolutely. I think from an economic model standpoint, I think most moderate Democrats are capitalists. We believe in capitalists and the capitalistic system.
Amen.
We believe that from a kind of an oversight standpoint, that from time to time that the capitalistic system will go on its rails as organizations sometimes get too big and monopolize the system. And at those time periods, there needs to be some form of intervention. But then on the liberal side, of course, you have much more of what I would consider a very, very harsh kind of class warfare that largely wants to kind of, you know, and I've heard conservatives say this a lot of times. They want to spread the wealth, if you will. And to a certain extent, that's true. There is definitely a war that is on one side. But on the other side, let's go to the Republican side as well. You know, you have people, of course, you have a lot of evangelical Christians in the far right sometimes that are largely exploited by people who are looking for financial favor and financial gains. And they ultimately utilize these people. And so you see it on both sides.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you're talking about the extremist viewpoint here. And you're exactly right, which is what we rail against here on the platform. As you probably know, in America Out Loud,
sure,
we rail against the extremist.
Right.
And I agree 100% with you on the far left and the far right. These people tend to get the camera and the mic time because they have extremist viewpoints. And it creates more, interest in sound bites for the 6 o'clock news, if you will, Clinton, you know?
But I'll tell you, you know, domestically in the U.S., I mean, the Democratic Party on the House side has had Nancy Pelosi as its kind of speaker, if you will, for, in my opinion, far too long. You've seen her get long in the tooth, and yet she's held on the power despite a series of opposition. And if the issue, frankly, for a lot of Democrats is well, then we lose this woman.
Right.
There is a plethora of other great women who are out there on the Democratic ticket who I think could offer a voice of moderation and could bridge the gap between what is viewed largely by a lot of people on the Democratic side as elitism and really being able to translate a message to the working class people.
You know, with a lot of the players we've already talked about, even this early on Nozzle here today, I got to ask you up here, have you done a self-reality check yourself within the party? And have you ever thought and considered turning your card in and going another direction? I'm not trying to be a smart guy here. I'm just really, well, because you just pointed out several things. I mean,
sure,
quite a bit here. And when you take a look at a lot of the characters you're talking about, I mean, this thing, the Democrat Party, and you take a look back to what happened through the last election here, and you look at a lot of the characters they got around, they haven't made a lot of good choices in recent times here. Have you ever considered that? That's a real question, sincerely.
So on the Democratic side, let me explain to you why I stay a Democrat. I stay a Democrat largely because of what the Democratic Party used to represent.
There you go.
Okay. And that is why I stay. And the same way that there's a lot of Republicans who truly believe in smaller government and fiscal responsibility, you know, and really, it's been a very long time. I mean, you know, Eisenhower was the last time that they had a Republican president that actually balanced a budget.
Right.
That's a very long time to go having a balanced budget. And yet they're supposed to be the party of fiscal responsibility and smaller government.
Well, not do they not only balance a budget, but most years we don't even have a budget.
Correct.
I mean, you know, and that's not a Democrat Republican problem. That's an American problem. You understand?
You got it. Yeah. You got it. 100%.
And that is the big deal here. So I think a lot of people lose sight, Clinton, of where the country really is. And in talking to you, I mean, you know, it's people like you, though, that really could be a new generation of leaders for the Democratic Party, but they've lost sight of all this. I mean, when you think of Bernie Sanders, again, you think of Elizabeth Warren, you mentioned Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Hillary Clinton. I mean, Donna Brazile, there's a whole legacy of corruption here, or maybe that's not even the right word. Maybe it's a legacy of weirdness. I mean, for whatever way you want to call it, Clinton. But there is, you know, and I'm not saying they don't prevail in every party, because they do. I listen. There are many kooks in the far right as there are in the far left. I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
But I think that's why you're seeing the uprise of the independent movement probably in this country. We haven't talked about that on Nalzer yet, and that brings me to a really interesting point, Clinton, because I think both parties are losing. They're losing a population within their ranks here. People are getting very disenfranchised with both political parties, huh?
Oh, of course. I mean, take a look. I mean, for a brief period of time before his Aleppo gaffe, look at the rise of Gary Johnson as a libertarian and what he was doing.
That's right.
You know, and you look, obviously, you go back to Ralph Nader. Heck, you go back to Ross Perot. And you look at all these guys.
You know, I liked Gary, by the way. And just because he thought Aleppo was a disease in South Africa, what's wrong with that, man? It's okay. It's all right.
When you're ready for the big stage, if you're not at least reading news on a daily basis, you don't deserve the job.
Come on. You know, hey, all right, I'll give you some of that. But actually, some of them are doing such damage to our country. Some days I'm almost wondering if it's better they don't read the news, I have to tell you. But, you know, with all fairness.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, and you hit on a couple good points, too, on kind of the Democratic Party, you know, and I'll call it my party because I'm still a registered Democrat. And it's, you know, I think one of the challenges that we have is so with the Democrats, we tend to choose people from the most liberal of areas to represent us. I mean, Pelosi, of course, is from California, which is a very, very liberal area. And there's nothing wrong with that ideology, but it doesn't represent the rest of your party, you know. And you take a look, obviously, a lot of times as well. I mean, George W. Bush, of course, was from the heartland of Texas, if you will. And, you know, you look at each of these individuals and you say, you know, which ones really historically sometimes do the best? Well, if you look at it, I mean, regardless of how you felt about him, Clinton was a Democrat from Arkansas. Reagan was a Republican from California, you know, and you think of both of them and the success that they had in Washington, D.C., and you realize both of them had to compromise. They had to work together. They had to basically figure out how to reach a hand across the aisle. When you come from California as a Democrat, you come from Texas or Alabama as a Republican, you don't have to do that.
Yeah, that's true. We've been talking about California a lot on this platform in recent days and weeks, I have to tell you. We've had a lot of the people on from Sanctuary Cities, Sanctuary State out there, FightSanctuaryState.com, others. It's been a pretty hot topic, clearly around the nation. At some point, some people see it as California against the nation or the nation against California, either one. You bring up Nancy Pelosi. I have to tell you, back to your point in saying that you probably believe she's been around too long, hanging around too long, maybe is the right way you said it, something like that. And I have to tell you, there are some people who think she might become back the Speaker of the House in 2018. Now, talk about liabilities when we were talking about Hillary Clinton. I mean, this lady, there are days when she's on a hot mic, I tell you, or a cold mic, or any mic, or it doesn't matter what she's on. And you can't make any sense of what she's saying. She rumbles on, and you can't even put, I mean, there's a lot of speculation that she is experiencing potentially dementia of sorts or other problems. Could she potentially be having some health problems that we don't know about? Not trying to be a smart guy here again, but, you know.
Well, again, when it comes down to health and when it comes to people's appearances, I would prefer not to speculate on either. I will just basically say that.
But do you have a question? I'm not asking you this. Do you have a question?
Yeah.
That? I mean, come on, she's as, I mean, what?
But I mean, she has represented what I consider to be a kind of a much more left point of view in the Democratic, you know, kind of in the House, if you will, for a very long period of time.
Wow.
And it has, they have largely boxed out. If you look at, for example, even Senator Evan Bayh, who is very much a moderate
That's
voice
right.
from Indiana,
That's right.
you know, that, you know, these voices and these people who are moderate,
we're gonna hear from them.
Yeah, I mean, even Tulsi Gabbard, who basically, you know, sounded the bell, if you will, as a congresswoman on what was going on at the Democratic Party.
Right.
You see these things and they get silenced and they get put in a box and be told and told not to say a word, that the big boys are talking right now, if you will.
Right.
And the problem with that is the big boys unilaterally are disliked by 80% of Americans.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
You know, and that is not a Democratic
yeah.
problem or a Republican part problem. Right now, Congress actually has a 20% approval rate.
And that's high right now. What are you talking about?
I mean,
it sinks lower from time to time. But Congress, Congress has had a low approval rate, and whether it's Democrat or Republican doesn't matter. It just has a low approval rate, and because
you got it.
Yeah, because it's the whole thing is ass backwards, Clinton. It's a non-functional body of government. It's supposed to be the best we have in the world, but sometimes you just have to shake your head and wonder, there's got to be a better way. It's all sort of self-defeating a lot of the times, where we just when most of the energy is spent on beating each other up and how to fox each other, or who's got the next best-selling book to how to destroy each other, I think you sort of lost the race, and you lost a sense of the big picture. You see what I mean? You know?
Yeah, and I think worse than that is, you know, there's a saying, what hope do we have when good people do nothing? You know, and you have so many people who want to run for public office at some point or another in their lives.
Right.
And then they look at the political machine that's out there now and how it chews through not only just that individual, but their spouse, their children, you know, and anybody that's around them.
Mm-hmm.
And we've hit this fervor, if you will, in this country that good people don't want to get into it anymore.
Listen, I want to talk to you a moment about immigration and illegal immigration, which is another pretty hot topic over the weekend. Of course, this topic is not going away anytime soon, mostly because, A, we have a big problem in this country, I'm saying to you. I don't know how you figure it, but I believe we have a major problem in this country, not with legal immigration. We are a country of immigrants, and legal immigration is a pride of America. The problem is, back to your point moments ago, Clinton, the extremist viewpoint, they take legal immigration, mix the cards up real quick, and try to, you know, get fancy with the words, and then tie illegal immigration to it. Maybe you can give me a real answer to what I ask you here. Why is it the party, the Democratic Party specifically, well, we know what the answer is. I believe you know to this. Typically, they've been in favor of walls. They've been in favor of border control. They've been in favor of, you know, hopping down, getting a really immigration program in place. Certainly, Bill Clinton was all over this. Others have been all over it. Yet, right now, they're against all of it. And they're using, of course, you know, the president comes out over the weekend and he starts to tie it together with the NAFTA deal and all of this with Mexico. Mm-hmm. This was a big hot item through the campaign. It's probably the one big reason this president won election, to the surprise of a lot of people. Why is it that, is it just because it's Trump that the Democrats now have taken this mode of, we don't want a deal anymore? Is that the reason? Because he, you know, for real?
You know, I can't tell you whether or not it's Trump or not. What I can tell you is it's more of a tit for tat, if you will, in my opinion.
Okay.
You know, 8 years with Barack Obama as president, I can tell you that there is a lot of frustration within the walls of the White House and how the conservative or the Republican side was handling things that they wanted to do. And in fact, if you look at when Obama was elected, it took forever for him to get his appointments into the White House.
Hold that point right there now.
Yeah.
But I agree with what you just said, all of it, by the way, but it didn't take as long as it's taken this president to get them through.
Well, actually, I knew a couple appointees who's, you know, to protect them will remain nameless.
And I do as well.
But you know, they waited till nearly the 2 year mark as well before they were finally approved.
Yeah, but he got most of his heavy hitters in, not nowhere near the time frame this is right now. They're holding this president up completely. They don't give this president an inch, Clinton. So I got to tell you, I hear you what you say about Obama.
Sure.
But listen, I said from the beginning, when Barack Obama became president, the far right and a lot of the Republican establishment, they made it their business to defeat the president on every level they could. They made it very clear that their marching order was to defeat his agenda, defeat his popularity, and to be a thorn in his side. And they did that. In the
Correct.
Same way, and but a lot of my Republican friends forget that right now. They forget that clearly. They think that, you know, that Obama got everything he wanted. Clearly, he didn't. But again, did I like Barack Obama's platform? Absolutely not. Now, you talk about socialists and communists. I think this was a president who was far down that road of socialism. And quite frankly, he brought the country far to the left, which is why I think, which is the reason why Donald Trump's in the White House right now, because I've told you before, this country springs back to the center whenever you have that far of a, there's a mechanism here, you know, that happens to pull it far back in. You disagree with that?
Well, I think specifically what happened is I think there's missed opportunities.
I think
you look after 2001 when George W. Bush was president, of course, and he had an opportunity. He had every person in the nation sitting there saying, what do we do? What can we do? How can we move this nation forward?
Right.
And at that time period, the response was go shopping. There was no big, there was no big sacrifice asked of the American people at that time period. And then you look when Obama got on. And regardless of a lot of his policies, because I will tell you, I disagree with many of them as a Democrat. But I will
Good
tell
to
you,
hear.
He had one opportunity really to solve a key piece, and he chose not to, which was on the issue of race, which dumbfounded me that he didn't seize that opportunity to really have an honest, open discussion.
He put all his energy into health care. That's what they did. They blew all their political capital in health care, and they did it overnight, and they did it by arm twisting senators, and they did a lot of things that they should not have done. And there was no, which is why the Republicans returned the favor with tax reform.
Yes.
You
well,
see?
Yeah. Well, they figured out that they could just defend the mechanism.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's effectively what they've done.
Yeah.
You know, and the reality of it is as a result of it, the American people, sadly, are going to end up being the ones that suffer from poor action and poor reaction
mm-hmm.
out of this,
mm-hmm.
because realistically, you don't need a socialized Medicare system. Mm-hmm. What you need is cost controls.
Amen.
You know.
Amen.
You know,
I agree.
When pharmaceutical, sales go up 500%, you know, mm-hmm. the instant that you put in place a government funded mandate
right.
and no one can no longer afford their standard food,
That's right.
and you know, you have no controls in place.
It's out of control.
And,
yeah.
Correct.
Right. Yeah,
correct.
Totally right. I think most of my people I know in my world would agree with everything you just said because it is out of control. They're not reeling back in the expenses. It's kind of anything that goes, and that's the sort of attitude. Then when you put the government piece in there about government mandated insurance and you have the markets, and there was a lot of payoffs back with the health insurance companies back to the federal government, there were a lot of evil deals in there. And of course, the problem is if you look at the way socialism really gets its foothold in any country in history, they do it through means of things like health care, Clinton is what they do, and other things. And then the government runs everything. And the problem is there's just too much government for a lot of people right now. So that's where this president was kind of charged with sort of rolling it back, if you will. So Mexico specifically.
Yes.
We have this very transient border, and it's in the south and it's in the north as well, by the way. I'm very mm-hmm. conscious of both borders.
Sure.
Again, back to being a sovereign nation and being able to protect ourselves and know who's mm-hmm. coming and going. We're in a different world today than we were 50, 100 years ago, Clinton. We're in a different world entirely.
Sure.
And I think the sooner we admit that as a country, the sooner we're going to be able to keep ourselves safe and secure here for a lot of reasons. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of bad cats. It's not just illegal immigration and people that are – if that wasn't enough, that they're draining the system and the welfare system is exploding and people are exploding and the quality of living in California and a lot of those southwest states is plummeting. It's not just bad enough that, but then you've got the drug cartel and you've got the opioid problem. You've got drugs coming through the border everywhere, back and forth, and it's not just that. And then you've got, real terrorist activities and bad cats that are coming across the border. This is a proven
yeah.
fact.
So, right.
And it's not just that. I mean, I could go on and on. I mean, I can give you six
sure.
reasons why. That, I mean, this isn't just a campaign talking point. And it's not just about making Trump feel good, because I don't really care if he feels good or not. But we're talking about the survival of this country. And we're talking about a country that's, if we're going to continue to be a country or cease to exist, You take a look at Mexico. Mexico, he puts a tweet out there. Mexico's not doing anything because they don't give a rat's ass. They're coming from, you know, back in Central America through Guatemala, through all of those countries. They're coming up through the Mexico food of chain. They're coming right into the border here. They know, right into the states here, they know full measure here, Clinton. They know full well, if you can get into the country here, then you got it made. Because ICE is going to throw you back out on the streets. They're going to leave you alone. They're not. None of the laws are being enforced. We have a horrible, horrible immigration system. But now the president, who's kind of a strategic player, the way he throws these tweets out, he upsets a lot of people. But I have to tell you, when he throws this one out about NAFTA, is this a good strategy or a bad strategy, in your opinion, coming through the weekend where he throws out and says to Mexico, be careful here, friends. You keep pushing in, because right now there's evidently tens of thousands ready to come across the border, you know?
Well, I think Trump, you know, I don't know. Did you ever read Art of the Deal?
Yes.
Okay. So I think a lot of what he has in his book, he's trying to enact ultimately as president.
He's been doing that. Absolutely.
And I think a lot of it is posturing, but it's posturing built on getting players to the table. Now, I certainly...
which is what he seems to be good at, by the way, a.k.a. North Korea.
You know, and for me, from a diplomacy standpoint, I would definitely like, you know, I like the speak softly but carry a big stick mentality.
So you don't like the term rocket man, I take it, then, huh? Rocket man! No? No good?
You know, insulting foreign leaders typically isn't the way, you know, for me, that I, from my experiences...
But what if it worked? What if it worked?
If it works, then you know what? Then hey, at the end of the day, maybe the juice was worth the squeeze, I suppose, if it works, right?
Let me quote you on that. The juice is worth the squeeze. I like that. Clinton says that. All right, go ahead.
So, but you know, to cycle back to Mexico and even the drug thing, yes, I think there's two important points to think about. One of which is the drug use in the U.S. has obviously escalated to epidemic levels.
Epidemic.
And instead of us really thinking about the supply chain, what I think is most important before we even get to that point is anybody that does a drug, anyone that has a drink. Think about it. What are they doing? They're saying, I had a rough day. I had a tough, I can't deal. I can't cope. What's happening in America right now, the reason why so many people are turning to drugs, I believe is we've lost our hope. And I think that is something that we need to do a better job as a society of really showcasing, you know, and really providing people a better pathway, you know, through the capitalistic system to be successful so that they know that they can realize these dreams. And I don't think for many of them, I think it's lost on them.
Let me ask you this, and you may not know the answer to this question, but I want to ask it. When do you think we lost our hope? When?
You know,
it's a tough question.
It really is. It's a tough question. You know, I think we got polarized terribly after the 2000 elections, and I think that hurt. I think that turned kind of brother against sister, if you will, within households. You know, did you vote for Bush? Did you vote for Gore?
That's right.
And then after 9/11, you know, people were looking for something. We're looking for.
We came together. Right? We rallied together.
We rallied together, Democrat, Republican. We were waiting for something great. What were we going to do? Were we going to decrease our reliance on fossil fuels entirely? What were we going to do? And the answer was nothing. We just needed to go shopping more. You know, and meanwhile, at the same time period, we sacrificed and gave up some of our rights, of course, the rights to privacy and other things at the expense of keeping ourselves safe. Mm-hmm. It's a give and take. And so, you know, I think you look fast forward to today and you look at a lot of our youth, you look at a lot of these people that are out there right now.
Okay.
And you know, the recovery for a lot of people that happened economically, you'll see, you know, you can feel the recovery in New York. You can feel the recovery in L.A. You can feel it in those big. But, you know, if you go to rural America, they don't feel that recovery. You know, they don't feel that recovery. You know, that
you're speaking of economically now.
Correct.
Okay.
And so many people feel like they've been forgotten, you know, and I think that's the truth of the matter. I mean, you look at the fervor and the support of these people who were supporting Trump, and a lot of the people that were backing him adamantly were backing them because as the economy changed, the government did nothing to prop up and help these people.
Right. Well, interesting point you bring up, Clinton. It has been going on a long time. I'm glad you said what you said and you didn't go ahead and pin it on just the current president, because I would have called you out on it. Because we lost hope a long time ago. I agree with that theory. I think this country has gone through a series of glitches and communication problems internally. We forgot what it means to be American. You're right. The last time the country rallied together to remember that they were Americans was right at 9/11. I agree with that. But listen, I'm not a big supporter and fan of George W. Bush's administration and what he accomplished. I'm not a fan of his at all. I look at his administration being not too different. I mean, if you take Barack Obama, you take George W. and you take Bill Clinton, you could tie them all together and you wouldn't notice much between one administration to the next. From my worldview.
Sure.
Not just anybody's worldview. The president in here now, right now, is a game changer. He's a canoe rocker. I call that a canoe rocker. For a country to put a canoe rocker in, things have to be pretty bad. And things get to a point where they've got to, the country's willing to give the keys to the car to somebody else or say, you know what? And you know, Clinton, at the end of the day, I think Americans said, you know what? They're not doing a good job. Democrats are not doing a good job. Republicans are not doing a good job. The parties are not doing a good job. The system is not doing a good job. It's all broken. And you know what? They took the keys. They took long and hot. They took a look at the voter program and they said, you know what? We're going to give it to this guy, Trump. Never ran for office. Before we pause here, any comment or thought on that?
You know, I think the support, though, of Trump, to consider what stood out for me more than anything else right. during the election was the fact that only 50% of Americans turned out to vote. You know, and you think about that, whether they supported Hillary and whether they supported Trump, 50% of Americans said, I hate both of these candidates so bad, I'm not going to show
they
up.
They stayed home, yeah. Yeah, more so you know, Democrats didn't show up because correct. They had no hope correct. At all with Hillary. They right. showed up for the Republican side because that's how Trump got in.
Well, look, imagine if all that Hillary mm-hmm. had to do, all that she had to do was stand up there and basically say, you know what happened in the DNC is wrong. Under me, I'm going to clean it up. Bernie got a bad shake. He's going to be part of my administration. And believe it or not, if she did just that one thing, you'd be talking right now about a President Hillary Clinton, as frightening as that may
well,
be to you.
You're saying, Well, you're saying that if there was some truth in the conversation, because there was never any authenticity there. There was never any truth there. And that's a great point. And, you know, at the end of the day, the American people can read through that. They know when you're pulling the wool over their eyes and they know when you're going to mean what you say. On the other side of the coin here, as much as Trump is a distraction for many, is as much as he throws, as you say, these strategic tweets and these throwaway messages out there, Clinton, all mm-hmm. for the point of to see, like you say, art of the deal. And you get it, obviously. You totally,
correct.
Totally get it. Not everybody correct. Gets that. And a lot of your fellow patrons on that side don't get it as well. The mm-hmm. Democrats, they don't really understand what he's doing when he does it. Certainly the media doesn't get it. Or if they get it, they're playing games with themselves, but God only knows. Having said all of that, I got to tell you, very interesting conversation here. There's a lot more to talk about on Nozzle. More in just a moment.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutLoud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
President Trump ran on a campaign. I mean, if you didn't hear China, you know, thousands of times, you didn't hear it once. I mean, China was a big talking point through the entire
sure.
campaign, clearly,
sure.
For
sure.
a lot of reasons. Now, one of the right. big reasons is the $500 million campaign deficit we have, the trade deficit we have with mm-hmm. China. And they're not the mm-hmm. only ones, but they're the more serious one we have with China, which, you know, a lot of people don't realize how upside down backwards it is with our trade, which we've created some really bad trade deals over the past many years. And that's been going on for a long time, Clinton, long time.
Of course.
This country's been taking a bath. Middle America has, back to your point in the last segment, is about middle America hurting. Well, guess why middle America is hurting? I give you a whole lot of reasons, and we can start right here with the point of trade.
Correct.
I mean, and the way we've gutted out the manufacturing in this country, we've gutted out the middle part of America.
You know, I think you know, the China trade war that's out there, and kind of on a global sense, I think the big mistake that we made when we went out and went along the lines of having global free trade was that we were willing to do it at all costs.
That's it.
You know,
upside down backwards.
Yeah, I mean, and you look at NAFTA, even when NAFTA was signed, NAFTA, when it first started, was basically a great idea in theory when it started. It went out there and we started importing and exporting goods from Mexico. And then all of a sudden, companies began realizing that they could go out and they could actually move their factories to Mexico. They could move their factories to Canada, and they no longer needed American workers.
And they did it.
This high. Yeah, and
they did it.
You know, I mean, right now, organizationally for me, I mean, we when we import goods here to the U.S., I'll give you an example.
Right.
We can't touch the labor and manufacturing costs that are basically made in China here.
No way.
And I look for it on a regular basis. Believe it or not, I do. I mean, even this trade war, the first thing I did was I said, you know what? Let me see if I can basically now manufacture goods in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And I began taking quotes and taking a look at what we could do to manufacture products here. And you know what? Even with the 20% tariff that's being proposed on import from China, that still doesn't touch it.
Yeah, yeah.
We're still able to import, but the ones that it's going to really hurt more than anything else is a lot of, from a retail standpoint. And watch, you're going to go to the Family Dollars and the Dollar Generals and the Dollar Trees and those little value bins that were a dollar, if you will.
Right.
And now remember that those tariffs that are in place are going to go to 15 or 20%, depending upon what the item is.
Right.
Now those people no longer can make that. They can't hit that volume. They can't hit that margin.
So there'll be no more dollar store, let's put it that way. But I don't shop there anyway, so I don't really care.
Right.
Do you?
but a lot of consumers do.
In fact, it's one of the few.
Yeah. Right. It's one of the few retailers that's actually growing right now.
I guess you're right. So and I do recognize that, actually. Your point is well taken. And I thought about that earlier today, exactly, when everybody's thinking it's not a big deal. My thoughts, Clinton, to your point was, well, this is not a big deal for a lot of people, but it's a damn well big deal for those people, people that are trying to make a living out of this, that it's going to, I bet you, you know what I was thinking here over the weekend, buddy? I was thinking that a lot of these people were probably working overtime twice, three times as much over the weekend, trying to get all the trade and everything handled that they could possibly before this happened today.
You got it. I mean, it's get it in while, I mean, that 15, 20% tariff.
It's a lot.
I mean, and then you think about obviously what's going out. Now I'll flip it around on you though too. You know, aside from obviously produce, aside from pork, it's also recycled aluminum as well.
Right.
That's also part of that that's going. But from a domestic standpoint, you're going to have as a potential short-term benefit. You just think about supply and demand. If China's putting tariffs on it, and now as a result of that, American farmers can't basically import to China. Then guess what? They have a supply on hand, which then in turn, if you're going off of basic economics, means they're going to lower the price of the American consumer of food.
That's exactly what they're counting on. I mean, on the other side of this coin here.
Yeah.
So what do you? So the trade deals in play right now, where the president, again, back to your theory of art of the deal, throws out there the steel and aluminum points here and says, okay, here you go. Now he then goes ahead and he exempts certain countries based on NAFTA, even. He exempted Canada, Mexico, and some of that. And then he also, but he didn't exempt like Japan, he didn't exempt China, you know, for sure, because this was about China, right?
Right.
And it was about Japan as well, really.
Sure.
What do you think happens with this now? And I assume the way the president did this, you don't necessarily disagree with it, the upside down part of our trade.
Yeah. So clearly, you know, in an ideal world, what would have happened when we did free trade would have been that we leveled the playing ground between the American worker and the Chinese worker and the American worker and the Japanese worker, where for an hour worth of work is an hour worth of work, if you will, and basically, you know, adjusting those things accordingly. So, you know, that would have been the best way to do it. I mean, how can you compete realistically as a manufacturer in the U.S., you know, from a worker, if you will, in that textile? If you're making one, 20 times what that same worker is making in China, you know, how can you compete?
You can't. That's the deal, man. And I know you know that as a business executive and corporate who deals with this and trade back and forth. I know you know what that means. But a lot of people are not paying attention. They don't really understand the severity of this thing. One thing for sure, Clinton, I think you will agree, we can't stay on the road we're on when it comes to the upside down bit of trade from our country and the deals that all presidents on both sides of the aisle have committed to over the past, well, 20 years. Our trade is upside down.
Yeah. No, this is a problem, obviously, that's gone on. I mean, it started with the original kind of New World Order, if you will, or trying to go for this big globalism, if you will, this direction towards global free trade.
So, and, Clinton, you know, having said that, you've got to give some credit then. Back to the art of the deal, you've got to give some credit, even if it's an inkling and you have a little bit of mea culpa here,
sure.
You've got to give some credit to the fact that this business guy gets in there and decides, you know what, he's going to take on some of the tough issues. Because I want to tell you right now, a lot of our presidents in recent times have refused to solve these tough problems. They didn't deal with a lot of this stuff. They didn't deal with the trade problems. They didn't deal with a lot of these problems that he's dealing with right now, that he's put front and center. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, I think he's definitely willing to, if you will, get down and dirty, in certain things that for a lot of other presidents, their advisors said, stay away from, don't touch it. I do think that there's a lot of truth to that. And that makes him a maverick to a certain, but the concern that you have, of course, with a lot of this stuff is what is the fallout? Even with this China trade, right? China trade deal, it starts with obviously us imposing tariffs and China, in turn then imposes theirs, and how far down the rabbit hole do we go before cooler heads prevail?
Well, okay. So what is the fallout down the rabbit hole, cooler heads? I hear you. Well, the other side of that is do nothing and then go to hell in a handbag real quick.
Sure. Yeah, well, you're right.
And that's more than a rabbit hole. That's a jumping off the cliff kind of moment, because that's where we're at in this country. Anyways, so the point is that these difficult decisions have to be made about things that are most challenging. Things like even, Clinton, like North Korea. That was a real head turner that he was able to get North Korea to the drawing board. And the summit was announced with Kim Jong-un and President Trump. And then, he visited China here this past week with Xi Jinping in China. That was a bit of a head turner. That surprised a lot of people, didn't it?
It absolutely. I think the entire, unfolding, if you will, of what has happened in Korea has been a little surprising. And, they have taken advantage of, obviously, Democrat and Republican presidents for going on three decades now.
That's right.
And it's always been the squeaky wheel. So they make a little bit of noise.
And they're at the moment of truth, buddy. They're at the moment of truth. We're at a moment of truth where you're going to have a nuclear state out there, a very hostile one. We're talking millions and millions and millions of lives at stake here.
The big key is who blinks first. It's no different than kind of the Cuban Missile Crisis, if you will. I mean, here you have this guy over here who now says he has it, and we're saying, blink. At the end of the day, I think there's a gamesmanship that's going on, but I don't think, at least I hope not, that that neither Trump nor Kim Jong-un is willing to really walk out there and hit a button and end millions of lives at the push of a button.
Well, you hope not. You say that, and I can't totally agree with you, because I think Kim Jong-un is not all together. I don't think he's got all of the cylinders flowing quite properly, you see? Yeah.
Well, the debate out there in America, though, is our guy doesn't either.
That's back to the art of the deal. Back to your point earlier, taking your talk point, there's a difference between the art of the deal and if you just look at the history of this multi-billionaire and what he's done in his life, there's a difference of that and a difference of this man who comes under the auspices of Kim Jong-un in North Korea and what he's about. That makes a lot of people nervous. I mean, this guy is a guy who would shoot his own family in the head and assassinate people around him just for sneezing the wrong way is not a guy you can really take too seriously when it comes to our salvation and future, as a human race.
Sadly, our world is becoming a more and more dangerous place with the level of dictators that are actually out there. I mean,
that's
you've got
it.
Him there, and you've got Maduro in Venezuela.
Yeah, which is another scumbag. You're right. We have to talk about that somewhere ahead, because I've got a lot of friends from Venezuela, and we just hope one day that the great people that they are in Venezuela have a chance to have some peace and freedom. But Maduro is a cancer. We'll talk about that again some other time. Hey, real quickly, another thing trending this afternoon. What do you think about this war on public education with Kentucky, Oklahoma, Arizona? So the teachers are walking. They actually went into the Capitol in Frankfurt today. It was a big big trending story on social media. And because they want more dollars put into education, which I think is a very noble thing to say, number one. And two,
sure,
we don't pay these teachers anything. You and I have talked about this before. What do you think of that?
For many years. Yeah. I think it speaks to what the ethos of a country is by what they spend their money on. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think domestically in the U.S., I think we've asked a lot out of our teachers, and in turn, we've given them very little. If you think, in fact, you know, to cover certain things. So Oklahoma right now they basically are going specifically for the restoration of funding for educational programs. They got a small pay raise actually already agreed to this year. Mm-hmm. Now their education association was asking for more, but if you think about where they're at, their average teacher pay since 1999 mm-hmm. went up only 0.9%.
Wow.
Okay, 0.9% when adjusted for inflation.
Not keeping up.
You know, meanwhile, domestic here in Florida, mm-hmm. if you go back and you look at inflation, mm-hmm. we've actually, even though the dollars have increased, when adjusted for inflation, it's decreased by 6.1% over that same time period here in the state of Florida.
Right.
You know, and so something's got to be done realistically to really put an onus. You know, we go out there every day and we say we value our teachers, we value our police, we value our firefighters.
Right, right.
Well, you know what? The best way that you can show value to them
is put your money where your mouth is. Put your money where your mouth is. And you and I would agree with that. We don't pay them enough, clearly, and there's not enough respect for education. But again, the education is a whole nother conversation, because the education system in this country is in need of repair. It's in disrepair, badly, for a lot of reasons, including the universities all the way down to the elementary school, sadly. Listen, also, I want to do a quick mention today that, sadly, what a beautiful life, Winnie Mandela, the wife of course, Nelson Mandela. She died today at the age of 81, and I want to mention that today on the program, Winnie Mandela. And she was by his side with the fight all the way through. I was watching some videos earlier today of them marching in the streets and all the work that they did around the world, you know. Also, today is hashtag World Autism Awareness Day, and President Trump proclaimed today exactly that. It's an opportunity to recognize and support all children and adults with autism spectrum disorder, and that is trended as well on social media. So today we've been talking here on Nozzle with Clinton Mueller, as I like to call him. Some people call him Clinton Mueller. It's one of those words that can go both ways. I'm going to bring your family back to recognize the true way to say that, Clinton. Clinton Mueller. There you go. So here we go. Say, well, what's going on with this man? So let me give you the floor here, and please take 30 seconds and give us your prediction. What do you think?
Well, I think, just to kind of circle back from a prediction standpoint, I'll give you two. I think if the trade war obviously continues, pay particular attention to what happens at the dollar stores and the value chain driven stores. Mm-hmm. I think you're going to have a tremendous impact economically there. And then secondly, come November, you know, as is everything, I think you're already seeing it. I think there is going to be a knee jerk reaction with the legislature, and I believe that both the state house and the national house and national senate will likely flip. What that makeup is going to be and who that leadership comes through, hopefully the Democratic Party chooses people that will moderate that voice. Mm-hmm. But sadly, I'm not that optimistic.
Yeah. Well, I hear you, and I know you are generally an optimist, and the fact that you say that should give everybody pause a moment here. I'm not sure I agree with the House thing, but we will see. It depends where the mood of this country is just ahead with a lot of the things we're talking about very clearly. You know, I make two predictions here at the end of the show here, friends, and my first one will be with Mexico and the United States. I think that relationship may get worse before it gets better. I think it's very volatile, but again, they've been eating off of the NAFTA lunch for a long time. These problems are not the makings of the current administration, but they are problems that need to be solved with the NAFTA deal here. It's a one-sided deal, as all these trade deals are. And we're going to have to tighten our belt a bit. And I predict that eventually we'll get through with Mexico and there will be a new day. It will be a new day. There'll be a new summit at some point, potentially with Mexico, Canada, and the U.S., a North American summit. And it'll be a day that they can toast, where they finally came to cooler heads would prevail. And I look forward to that. I also predict we'll be back here tomorrow, same time, same place. Nozzle off.